The phrase is Project Freedom. It sounds like a branding exercise. It is not. On Monday, the United States began forcing open the Strait of Hormuz, the 21-mile-wide choke point that carries roughly a fifth of the world's traded oil and liquefied natural gas. According to Reuters, U.S. Central Command says American forces destroyed 6 Iranian small boats and intercepted Iranian cruise missiles and drones as the Navy tried to move commercial shipping through the strait. President Trump claimed 7 Iranian fast boats were sunk. Iran denies the U.S. account. But even if every disputed detail is treated carefully, the shape of the story is clear. A ceasefire that Washington said had ended hostilities is now being tested by missiles, drones, tankers, warships, and legal definitions that are doing a lot of work. This is The Synthetic Lens. I'm David Carver. Today, the war that is not legally a war, reopening the world's most important oil choke point by force. With me are Elena Vasquez on geopolitics, Ingrid Halvorsen on energy markets, and Stan Rogers on the U.S. legal and political question. Elena, start with the operation itself. What happened today?
The short version is that the United States moved from blockade pressure to active maritime reopening. Reuters, through reporting by Phil Stewart and Idris Ali, says President Trump launched Project Freedom on Monday to wrest control of the Strait of Hormuz back from Iran after Iran had effectively closed the waterway during the broader U.S.-Israel-Iran conflict. CENTCOM's commander, Admiral Brad Cooper, said the IRGC launched multiple cruise missiles, drones, and small boats at ships the United States was protecting. His phrase was that U.S. forces defeated those threats through the clinical application of defensive munitions. That is Pentagon language for a very real exchange of fire.
And this was not a simple convoy escort.
No, Cooper was explicit about that. He described an operation involving 15,000 U.S. troops, Navy destroyers, more than 100 land and sea-based aircraft, undersea assets, helicopters, and electronic warfare. He said this was broader than one-on-one escort duty, a layered defensive package built to move commercial shipping despite Iranian threats.
The stated proof point was 2 U.S.-flagged merchant vessels.
Right. CENTCOM says the U.S. cleared a pathway, including mine-clearing work, and then sent 2 U.S.-flagged commercial ships through the strait. The Guardian separately reported that Maersk said one of its U.S.-flagged vessels successfully exited the strait under U.S. military protection. Iran's Revolutionary Guards denied that commercial vessels had crossed and denied that U.S. forces had sunk Iranian boats.
So we have competing battlefield narratives.
We do, but we also have observable escalation. The Guardian's live coverage summarized it plainly. Trump threatened that Iran would be blown off the face of the earth if it attacked U.S. vessels. Iranian military command warned it would strike U.S. naval vessels approaching the strait. Iran claimed to have hit a U.S. frigate with 2 missiles. CENTCOM denied any U.S. Navy ship was struck.
And then the conflict spilled across the Gulf.
The UAE says its air defenses engaged Iranian missiles and drones. Fujairah reported a fire at its oil industry zone after what officials described as a drone attack originating from Iran. CBS reported Saudi Arabia calling for de-escalation and condemning Iranian targeting of civilian and economic facilities in the UAE. Oman also reported injuries near the Musandam coastline, which sits right by the strait.
This is why the word ceasefire feels unstable.
Exactly. Reuters says Admiral Cooper declined to say whether the April 8th ceasefire still remained in effect. That is a very careful non-answer. Meanwhile, Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said talks are making progress, but called Project Freedom Project Deadlock. So diplomacy is still moving while military forces are exchanging fire. That is the danger zone.
Elena, does this look like the start of a broader war or a coercive operation designed to avoid one?
Both, which is the problem. The United States is trying to change facts on the water without saying it has restarted the war. Iran is trying to resist without triggering overwhelming U.S. retaliation. Everyone is trying to calibrate force precisely in a crowded waterway full of commercial ships and national pride. That is not a stable system.
Elena Vasquez, stay with us. Ingrid, let's talk about why this narrow strip of water has everyone moving so fast. Hormuz is almost a cliche in energy coverage, but today the cliche became operational.
It did. The Strait of Hormuz matters because it is not just another sea lane. Before the war, roughly 20% of globally traded oil and liquefied natural gas moved through it. That means Saudi, Emirati, Kuwaiti, Iraqi, Qatari, and Iranian energy flows all depend on a corridor narrow enough that a handful of mines, missiles, or drones can make insurers panic.
And panic has a price.
Always. When tankers cannot move normally, the immediate costs are shipping delays, insurance premiums, rerouting where possible, and inventory uncertainty. The broader cost is volatility. Energy markets hate ambiguity more than almost anything. They can price a closure. They can price an opening. What they struggle to price is a strait that is, quote, open only if U.S. destroyers, helicopters, electronic warfare assets, and missile defenses are actively protecting each passage.
That's not normal commerce. That's commerce under arms.
Exactly. And it changes the economics. Reuters reported that Cooper said ships from 87 countries were effectively stranded in the Gulf because of Iranian threats. If shipping companies believe movement depends on joining a U.S.-protected operation, some will go, others will wait. Some governments will encourage participation, others will worry their flagged vessels become political symbols.
The U.S. operation was pitched partly as helping trapped ships and crews.
Which is not false. There are real sailors and real cargoes stuck in a strategic hostage situation. But the humanitarian frame and the coercive frame sit on top of each other. Project Freedom is both an attempt to rescue commerce and an attempt to break Iran's leverage over global energy supply.
How should listeners think about the market impact tonight?
Three layers. First, physical flow. How many ships actually move through over the next 48 hours? Second, military risk. Whether Iran continues firing missiles and drones, or whether today's exchange becomes a one-day signal. Third, legal and diplomatic risk, whether other states treat the U.S. operation as stabilizing the waterway or escalating the conflict.
And if the operation works?
If it works cleanly, and that is a large if, oil risk premiums can come down. The message would be that the U.S. can keep Hormuz functionally open. But if a ship is hit, if a U.S. vessel is damaged, or if an allied commercial vessel burns on camera, the premium goes the other direction very quickly.
There was a South Korean ship reportedly hit by an explosion.
Reuters noted that Trump said the South Korean ship was not part of the operation and suggested perhaps it should join U.S. protection efforts. That is a remarkable sentence. It implies a two-tier maritime reality: ships under the American umbrella and ships outside it. Markets will notice that.
Host Ingrid Halverson, thank you. Stan, let's come to Washington, because CBS reported Trump called this a mini war. That phrase is doing a lot of damage to the administration's legal argument.
It sure is. CBS framed it exactly the way lawyers and members of Congress will hear it. The administration has been trying to navigate around the fact that Congress has not authorized war with Iran. Under the War Powers Resolution, unauthorized hostilities are supposed to end after 60 days, unless Congress approves them. Trump told Congress last week that hostilities had, quote-unquote, terminated because of the April ceasefire.
And now U.S. forces are destroying Iranian boats and intercepting Iranian missiles.
Which makes terminated a harder word to defend. The administration's position is likely to be that Project Freedom is defensive, protecting U.S. forces, protecting commercial shipping, preserving freedom of navigation, responding to threats. There is a legal argument there. But when the president says out loud that the United States is in a mini war, he hands critics the sound.
What does Congress do with that?
Democrats will almost certainly argue that the administration is evading the War Powers Resolution. Some Republicans may be uncomfortable too, especially if this becomes expensive or if U.S. personnel are killed. but Congress has a long history of complaining about unauthorized military action and then not forcing the issue. The practical question is whether today's events create enough political pressure to demand a vote.
The phrase mini-war sounds almost casual.
That's the political risk. Mini-war is a branding attempt. It tells the public this is serious but contained, forceful but not Iraq, a war but somehow not the kind Congress has to authorize. That may work rhetorically for a day. It does not solve the constitutional problem.
And if Iran keeps firing?
Then the legal fiction gets thinner. The more this looks like sustained combat operations against Iranian forces, the harder it becomes to say hostilities ended. If the United States is running a naval operation with 15,000 troops, destroyers, aircraft, undersea assets, helicopters, and electronic warfare, while Iranian missiles and drones are being intercepted, ordinary people are going to call that a war. Courts may avoid it, Congress may dodge it, but voters understand the basic.
Stan, there's also a diplomacy trap here. Iran's foreign minister says talks are making progress. Saudi Arabia is calling for de-escalation. The UAE is being hit. Where does that leave the administration politically?
In a very narrow lane. If Project Freedom reopens the strait and pushes Iran toward a deal, Trump will call it strength. If it widens the war, critics will say he manufactured an escalation after telling Congress the war was over. The administration needs this to look like decisive crisis management. It cannot afford for it to look like the ceasefire collapsed on America's watch.
Host Alina, bring this back to the region. What are you watching overnight?
Three things. First, whether Iran fires again at U.S.-protected shipping. Second, whether the UAE retaliates or keeps the response defensive and diplomatic. Third, whether Oman, Saudi Arabia, or Pakistan can keep a negotiation channel alive. The most important sentence tonight may be RT saying talks are making progress. If that remains true, Project Freedom may be coercive diplomacy. If it stops being true, this is escalation with a press release.
Host, your watch list.
Vessel movement and insurance. If we see more ships accept U.S. protection and pass through, markets may calm. If operators hold back, then Project Freedom is more symbolic than functional. I would also watch LNG flows from Qatar. Oil gets the headlines, but LNG disruption would hit Asia and Europe hard.
Stan?
Congressional language tomorrow morning. If Democrats use mini-war in press conferences, the White House has a war powers headache. If Republicans start asking for briefings instead of offering blanket support, that headache gets bipartisan.
Here is where we are. The United States says it is reopening the Strait of Hormuz. Iran says the U.S. story is false and any interference in the strait is a violation. The UAE says Iranian missiles and drones crossed into its airspace. Saudi Arabia is calling for de-escalation. Iran says diplomacy is still moving. The President of the United States is calling it a mini-war. The danger is not just that the war resumes. The danger is that everyone acts as if it has not resumed, while the weapons say otherwise. Sources for this episode include Reuters reporting by Phil Stewart and Idris Ali via Al Monitor, The Guardian live coverage from May 4th, CBS News live updates, U.S. Central Command statements as reported, and public statements from Saudi Arabia and Iran's foreign minister. This has been The Synthetic Lens. I'm David Carver. We'll keep watching the strait.